Done on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday, the 14th of January. Our guest this hour, director of the University of Michigan's Energy Institute, asks this question: what should America do with its $2 per gallon gas windfall? He writes that behavioral response of consumers to falling gas prices has been rapid, but from the perspective of greenhouse gas emissions and the climate, not good. Gas retail sales in this country up 28% for the first 9 months of 2015. Longer-term consequences: the average gas mileage of new vehicles sold in this country has decreased from 25.8 miles per gallon in the summer of 2014 to 25 in November of 2015. We're buying less fuel efficient vehicles in the past year. Now, we couple that, of course, with a warming planet, and we have to look at that and how we are responding to low gas prices, which may not be very good for the planet. This hour, we'll talk about the issue and welcome your phone calls. Our guest is Mark Bartow. Mark Bartow is director of the University of Michigan Energy Institute and the professor of advanced energy research at the University of Michigan. He has extensive experience as a researcher, inventor, academic leader, and consultant for both U.S. and international organizations. We'll be welcoming phone calls for Professor Bartow. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, email talk at WPR.org, Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter as well, and that's at K Dunn Show. Professor Bartow, thank you very much for being with us.
Oh, thank you very much, Kathleen. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Yeah, it should be a very interesting show. Before we talk about how we're responding, can you give me an explanation as to why gas prices are so low right now? $1.79 I saw on the way to work this morning. And if it appears to you that this is a long-term trend?
Well, I'm sure we'll see some variations, and we may see an occasional spike. But I think I would expect to see low oil prices and low gas prices, even if they're moderately higher than today's, for some period to come. It arises from a couple of things. One is that our domestic production of crude oil in the U.S. is way up due to hydraulic fracturing.
Mm-hmm.
That has allowed us to decrease our fraction of imported oil from about 60% of our supply to about 30%. So the domestic supply has grown that much. We've seen slowdowns of economies elsewhere in the world that have decreased the demand.
Mm-hmm.
And then the OPEC countries essentially have decided to maintain their production levels. So in a sense, the world right now is awash in oil.
Hmm. The consumer response to this, and I guess you would imagine that this could happen. We're buying cars that take more gasoline, more gas guzzlers, which isn't particularly good for what we're also trying to do, which is curb greenhouse emissions.
That's correct. And there's a double whammy here, because not only are we buying less efficient cars, but the amount of travel tends to go up when gasoline is cheap as well. So the miles traveled goes up as the miles per gallon go down. So both of those have a negative impact.
So what should we do with the $2 per gallon gas windfall?
Well, the argument that I've tried to make is that consumers are saving a lot of money from this, and that it would be wise to try to reinvest some of that in our transportation infrastructure, for example. We have a lot of issues with roads and bridges in this country and in the state of Michigan in particular. I don't know what the situation is in Wisconsin. You certainly endure a similar winter climate.
Yes.
But also in investing in energy research to create new technologies, new clean energy supplies, deployment of energy infrastructure and also deployment of transportation infrastructure. One of the things that we have invested in the past is mass transit in urban areas. So, are there opportunities to capture a small amount of the savings from the low prices and invest that in ways that will have long-term benefits for the country and the economy and, by the way, the climate.
Mm-hmm. And what might be reasonable in your mind is about 25 cents per gallon?
Well, I simply use that as an illustration. I think, it'll be interesting to see how your viewers react. It almost seems sometimes like if the First Amendment guarantees free speech and the Second Amendment guarantees the right to bear arms, that the Third Amendment must guarantee cheap gasoline in terms of the way that people react. So some folks will say, even a penny or two increase would be intolerable. What I've tried to do in this and some of our other work, for example, looking at state renewable portfolio standards for electricity, is to try to put some of these costs in perspective. So, as I pointed out, the average consumer has seen the price of gas drop by of order $1.60 per gallon in the last year and a half. That amounts to a savings of probably about $1,000 per year.
That's a lot.
Yeah. Now, if you got a Christmas bonus from your employer of $1,000, you'd probably pocket no more than $800 of that by the time you paid state and federal taxes and Social Security. So, if we looked at this as sort of a Christmas bonus, and captured again some similar fraction, so 20% of $1.60 is 32 cents per gallon, what might we do with that? And there are a variety of things we could do, and the point is that it wouldn't necessarily have to be that much, but just to try to put that level of taxation of the windfall into perspective. Just what kinds of costs and benefits might there be?
Isn't this an indication, Professor Bartow, that now we're seeing gas prices so low and our first response, well, not everybody, but a lot of people are buying cars that are not as fuel efficient. Does it mean that perhaps we aren't as educated about what's happening to the planet as we need to be? Is there something wrong with our not taking in that information?
No, I don't think so. I think it's always the problem of sort of the accumulation of incremental effects. So, those of us who try to watch our weight, and I'm not very good at that, often react with, oh, well, if I have a donut today, that's not going to have much of an impact on my weight. And it's sort of the same thing with our energy consumption or the associated CO2 emissions, that, our individual decisions don't seem to be that significant, and they aren't, but collectively, when everybody acts the same way, they can have a big impact. What has surprised me is how quickly the public responds in terms of their car buying choices to the drop in the price of gasoline.
Mm-hmm.
So it's almost instantaneous.
Hmm.
And the irony, of course, is that most people will keep a vehicle 10, 12,
yes,
or more years. So they're making a long-term decision based on an immediate market signal on fuel prices. So it's the economists like to talk about the rational consumer, but I think it's another example where our response is often more emotional than rational.
Right. Yeah. And you cite that there's been a 5% increase in emissions from new vehicles over this period. That's substantial, isn't it?
Yes, and that basically corresponds to the drop in efficiency, because we've seen of order of 4 or 5% drop in efficiency.
Mm-hmm.
That translates into, for the same amount of miles traveled, that amount of increase in emissions.
The other issue, and I'm wondering if this will be problematic in terms of keeping gas prices low, is hydraulic fracking certainly has been under pretty intense scrutiny.
Yes. That has been the major contributor to the increase in domestic oil and natural gas supplies. Right now, because both natural gas and oil prices are quite low, we've actually seen a dramatic downturn in drilling and production of the shale resources that are hydraulically fracked. But, you know, that will come back if prices go up. But, you know, that the benefits we enjoy, or the things leading to the current low energy prices, are very much tied to the development and deployment of hydraulic fracturing.
We certainly have seen gas prices go up and down since we've been driving cars in this country. Do we have a historical reference here at all, Mark? Is there a time when the prices went up, there was a shortage, and or the prices went way down, is a better way to put this, and we decided, well, we're enjoying this, and we're going to put some money aside and try to find new sources of energy, or we're going to repair our roads? Is there a historical precedent?
Well, that's a good question. I'm not sure I can answer it. We've certainly seen when the price of gas spikes, as it did in the 1980s, that consumers do respond to that. They do buy more efficient vehicles. We saw that in part. That was why the domestic auto manufacturers kind of got left behind by the Japanese in the 80s. They were building smaller, more efficient cars, and Detroit continued to build gas guzzlers. I think that market is a bit more nimble today. Have we set aside funds before? Well, I'll just say the gas tax has not been increased, the federal gas tax, since 1993. And obviously energy prices have varied a lot over that time. We have seen it in other areas. One of the things I mentioned is that other things that consumers buy a lot of have, in some cases, had price supports. You know, we used to have milk price supports for a very long period of time, and some of those were funneled, well, some of it was funneled back into supporting the farmers, but also supporting the dairy industry. So, you know, in terms of public policy, there are lots of mechanisms and lots of ways to connect resources and behavior that you want to incentivize, you know, with some of the changes in the market.
Isn't that remarkable? There's been no increase in the gas tax federally since 1993. That's a long time ago.
Right. And of course, you know, inflation has happened in the meantime. So the buying power of that, and that goes into a transportation fund. So whether it's, you know, building new roads or federal funds to repair the ones we've got, or investments in mass transit systems, the kitty has been shrinking.
Right. You know? Let's welcome phone calls. We'll find out what the audience thinks about this idea. Our guest this hour is Professor Mark Bartow, Director of the University of Michigan Energy Institute, Professor of Advanced Energy Research at the University of Michigan. He's written about what should America do with its $2 per gallon gas windfall. It's a substantial amount of money, $1,000 for most of us during the course of a year that we've been able to enjoy for the past about year and a half. Prices today are lower even than they were yesterday. So should we? Our response to this has been, no surprise perhaps, to drive a lot more and also to purchase cars that are not as fuel efficient as perhaps they should be in order to cut greenhouse gas emissions and to do our part to take care of the climate. So would it make sense to take some of that windfall and put it toward mass transit, repairing our roads, doing some investment in renewable energy, or should we just enjoy being able to drive more, lower gas prices, and cars that get lower miles per gallon because we can, because it's cheaper? We welcome your phone calls. I anticipate we'll get quite a few, but that's the question of the hour. What should America do with its $2 per gallon gas windfall? 800-486-8655 is our number. Our email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page, where if you like us, you can find out what we're talking about in upcoming shows. We don't bombard you with messages, but it's sometimes good to be in the know. Yeah, that's the Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter at Kay Dunn Show. To you in just one moment. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's go to phone calls. Our guest, Dr. Professor Mark Bartow, Director of the University of Michigan Energy Institute, and we start our calls with Mary in Madison. Hi, Mary.
Hello.
Yes, hi.
Yes, there was a recent poll. This is more or less a comment. There was a recent poll about what the top priority is for Americans, and they said, you know, national security, and I'm not being blasé about terrorism in this country, but I'm more concerned about air I can breathe, water I can drink, and good soil for my organic plant foods that I eat. And I was just wondering, where the American head is. Thank you.
Thanks. Professor Bartow, where's the American head?
I think if I could answer that question, I'd be running for president. I think part of the problem is that we get bombarded with a lot of information and some of it's biased, some of it's not. And, what I've tried to do is to both convey unbiased information, but also to put it in perspective in terms of the, dollar amount to the individual and compared to the, cost of everyday life. And it's sometimes surprising. Really, the amount we spend on energy, even though it seems to be a hot-button item with folks, is pretty small in comparison to the other expenses of our daily lives.
Scott in La Crosse sends this email. I get Minnesota and Wisconsin news. I recently learned the Minnesota governor wanted to raise gas taxes to help with road repairs, but couldn't get it through the legislature because they have too much of a surplus and it wouldn't look right.
That's interesting.
Isn't it?
That's certainly not the case in Michigan. Our governor and legislature struggled for the better part of a year to figure out how to raise about $1 billion for the roads. As I pointed out, if you wanted to do that all with a fuel tax, it would be about a quarter per gallon, which, again, is a small fraction of the price drop over the last year and a half. Ultimately, they did raise the gas tax in stages that doesn't kick in yet, but then cut some of the income taxes and the earned income credit. So, in fact, I think they made the tax support for our roads somewhat more regressive than it would have been with just trying to do it with a straight increase in the gas tax.
Marty in Kenosha, hi. Marty?
Yes.
Go right ahead.
Hi, thank you. Hey, what's the plausibility that OPEC is letting the price drop just to squeeze out the fracking industry in North America?
Oh, I think that's absolutely part of what they're doing. But the question is, can they succeed? I mean, we have those resources in the ground. We know how to access them. So we may not be drilling now. But if you look at just the dramatic increase in the amount of production by fracking within the last decade, I think those resources can be turned back on, not instantaneously, but fairly quickly. In a year or two, perhaps, in some cases. Of course, one of the challenges, the Saudis basically aren't, even at the amount they're pumping right now, because the low prices aren't generating enough to sustain their central budget. So they're running large budget deficits and cutting essentially public spending over there. So there are limits to how far they can go to try to keep others out of the business.
Thanks for your call, Marty. Jim in Wausau. Hi.
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 I'm kind of the price of the tax on gasoline is by the gallon, if I'm not mistaken. If consumption has gone way up, the money coming in should have gone way up, is one thing. Another thing, too, then our governor kind of did away with the right to work state. So construction should actually be going down. I'll get off and listen.
Well, I don't know about the construction side. One of the issues is that our consumption had been falling a bit since the 2008 recession. I have to admit consumption increase number that I use is probably a little misleading. If you do a search, that's the number that comes up from the Department of Energy. But it's actually a little harder to come up with how much the gasoline consumption is going up, because some of the sales are to and from storage. So there's a certain buffer there. So, but there's no question that the consumption has gone up, but the 28% number is probably exaggerated a bit. You're right, that in principle will generate more revenue, but again, the consumption increase hasn't been anywhere near the erosion of the value of the tax that we do have since 1993 due to inflation.
Mm. Mark, when you say in the piece that you wrote, in some ways we're still captive to thinking in terms of energy shortages from the oil shocks of the 70s and the 80s, what do you mean?
Well, I'll give you an example. I started college in 1973, and the first month that I was a college student, there was the Yom Kippur War and the Arab oil embargo shortly thereafter. So my entire professional education and professional lifetime has been in the sort of, post-first oil embargo era. And, while I was in college, the prices of gasoline at the pump doubled, in the first year, and doubled again by the time I graduated. And, we had gas lines during the early 80s after the Iranian Revolution and things like that. And we've had gas price spikes. And so people tend to remember those extremes. And I think, up until less than a decade ago, we were still thinking in terms of energy being limited, importing a large amount of our oil. And I think that's also, as I said, colored our thinking. And we haven't really broken out of that. So I think the idea of peak oil is one that really is not that important. With fracking and other things, we have much more ample supplies than we realized. And the bigger challenge is to address the emissions and climate problem in an era where, the background, and there will be some variations from time to time, is fairly cheap and abundant energy. So, and a lot of people are cynical about that. The reaction is, yeah, right, it's only been a couple of years since we had $4 a gallon at the pump. It will go back up there. And we may see some spikes like that, but I think in general, we're going to see relatively low prices for a while.
And does it make it harder for us to move to transportation that is not gas-driven, renewable electric cars, things that we haven't even imagined yet?
Yeah, it certainly does. As we look certainly one technology that we have today that you can go to the dealer and buy is a hybrid. Those tend to be higher gas mileage cars, so we're seeing the average shifting away from those or away from higher gas mileage cars. It certainly makes the implementation of more widespread electric vehicles or hydrogen powered vehicles as they're trying to implement in California. It makes that more difficult.
We have a lot more messages coming in. Jonathan writes on Facebook, gas isn't going to stay cheap, so let's invest in fewer roads instead. By that I mean rebuilding communities that don't force people to drive everywhere. We'll be healthier, more connected to our neighbors, greener, or we can spend the windfall on more roads now and face a crisis trying to retool our cities when gas is really expensive.
I agree with that in the long term. Someone once said, people don't eat in the long run, they eat every day. And it's the same with our transportation needs. So while we may want to transition to different infrastructure for transportation, for electricity supply or other things, the time constant for doing that is going to be you know, a decade or several decades. So we can't just say, okay, we're going to go cold turkey. You know, we want more public transportation, so we're going to not build or maintain roads. We have to keep existing or investing in some of the existing infrastructure and types of infrastructure for a period of decades in this transition.
Our phone number, a couple lines are open, 800-486-8655. The guest, Mark Bartow, director of the University of Michigan Energy Institute, asks us this question. What should America do with its $2 per gallon gas windfall? We have been enjoying Christmas since July of 2014, when the average price for all grades of gas peaked about $3.75 a gallon. Since then, $2.90 by Thanksgiving in 2014 and $2.14 by the end of 2015. And this morning I saw it at $1.79. So it's a financial windfall. What do we do with that financial windfall? And how do we juxtapose what's happening there with what our needs are for a planet that doesn't keep getting warmer? What we're doing is buying cars, we're driving more, and we're buying cars that are not as fuel efficient. What should we be doing? Should we entertain the thought of an increase in a gas tax that we could use for a variety of purposes, making sure our roads are safer than they are right now? They're filled with potholes. Do we have an infrastructure need? Do we need more research money into alternatives to oil, even though the price is very low now? What do you think? We'd love to hear your thoughts. 800-486-8655 is our number. We go to Tom in Escanaba, Michigan. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Hi.
So my comment was, I believe that since the Affordable Care Act, a lot of us that are in the lower middle class and have employer-provided health care have seen dramatic increases in our premiums that we pay, along with the amount that our deductibles have risen. And any gasoline windfall in my particular pocket is going to help offset the additional medical costs that we have incurred since the Affordable Care Act kicked in.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much.
All right.
You know, I think one of the points is that people are concerned, especially about how any tax increase affects those who are unemployed or struggling or seeing dramatic increases in costs in other areas. The point is that's not the only public policy mechanism. You can certainly think about things like increases in the earned income credit to help folks at the lower end of the tax scale. Another thing, talking about the question raised by the previous caller about mass transit, is that, one of the ways we could dramatically reduce transportation costs for individuals, and especially in urban areas, would be to have mass transit systems that were sufficient that they didn't need to own a car. So imagine taking a small amount of our resources now and making a longer-term commitment to building those kinds of systems. And ultimately, the windfall could be even greater because you wouldn't need to own a car or buy gasoline for it.
Isn't it hard to even imagine being able to live that way? We're so tied to our cars, aren't we?
In this country, yes. And, but if you look at Europe,
right.
Certainly, it's much closer to that. Some of it's tied to our ideas about the quality of life. So, if I can press another hot button, I would argue that one of the biggest contributors to urban sprawl, which leads to, ineffectiveness or inability to build mass transit systems and increasing our commute distances, one of the biggest contributors has been the home mortgage deduction on your income tax. Now, that's been a deliberate part of public policy for almost a century because, the American dream is home ownership, and we've institutionalized that. So something that we sort of take as a value and a quality of life issue has some other implications that we don't think about. And the fact that the same isn't done in Europe, I think, leads to a more compact and efficient organization of society.
Mike and Slinger, hi.
Hello, Kathleen. Yeah, my comment is I don't know what show I heard it on. It was on public radio because that's all I listened to. But the commentator's comment was that Saudi Arabia is pumping oil right now because they realize that in 20 years it's not going to be worth anything because of alternative energy sources are going to come into play and their oil prices are going to drop even lower than they are. So they're trying to make as much money as they can right now. And just to comment on what your person said today, I don't know his name, but I have to drive 6 miles to get to a grocery store. I have to do that every day. I live in the country. I can't hop on a train and go there. I think that's great for urban areas, but for rural areas, I don't think the expense would make any sense. So that's my comment. I'll listen to you on the radio. Thank you.
Thanks, Mike.
Yeah. Well, you're absolutely right about the latter point. And again, I think what we need is a balanced portfolio of investments. So some of it should certainly go into roads and in both urban and rural areas. But some of it could go into other forms of transportation and mobility where those make sense. I'll give you one other comment about mass transit. If you don't do it at an adequate level that people will use it, it actually has a bigger carbon footprint in terms of passenger miles than driving cars. So, you know, if you have a bus system that where the buses aren't very full, you're actually emitting more than just having everybody drive. So one of the challenges is, again, to make the commitment to build systems that are extensive enough that they actually do pass that critical point of usage where we actually save energy and emissions.
We go next to Tom in Madison. Hi, Tom.
Yes, hello. I'm wondering what your guest thinks about carbon taxes. I think it's pretty obvious from everything that he said that price is key, and the lower the prices go, the more we consume. So if you and the Paris Climate Conference recently, there were lots of declarations that what we really need is a price on carbon, which is currently, you know, it's not built into the system. So if we, and particularly there's a group called Citizens Climate Lobby, which is advocating something called carbon fiat dividend, and that would institute a steadily rising price on carbon that's the producers of carbon fuels pay the price at the wellhead or at the mine, and all the revenue from that steadily rising, or that revenue comes in and goes into a pot of money, which is then distributed to American households as dividends. So we all get dividends from this price that the producers pay, and that changes the price signals throughout the economy. So over time, and you know, over time, carbon fuels become more expensive. That and the money comes into our pockets. We get to spend it any way we want to. But the whole price signal is going to be it's more expensive to do that than it is to go for renewables, conservation, and that sort of thing.
Well, you're right. And sort of starting with the gas tax is essentially a potential first step or piece of that. You know, one of the reasons for focusing there is I think that's a lot more tangible to people where they can understand, you know, the costs to them out of pocket, the benefits they're getting back, and, you know, how much money is in their pocket and perhaps, you know, spending on things that are quite visible in their community, like roads. You know, the carbon tax is one of those things where economists across the political spectrum, and I'm not an economist, I'm an engineer, have pretty much said that's the, you know, the best policy that could be implemented. I think we're going to have to do that for the world to have any chance of meeting the COP21 targets. You know, the kinds of objections that are raised are that it will hurt those who cannot afford to bear the tax. Again, depending on how you utilize the funds, there are ways to ameliorate that. The other concerns are that it will hurt American manufacturing, because countries that don't similarly tax carbon will have an advantage over us. But, you know, if you think about the U.S. and China and Europe, if just, you know, the economies of that part of the world were to implement carbon taxes, you know, I don't think the rest of the world would be able to significantly drain from our economies by not having a carbon tax. So, you know, it's the best answer that no politician seems to want to touch. Mm. That's the short answer. Mm-hmm.
Bob sends this message: Mark, this is the perfect moment for state governments to add additional gasoline tax at the pump of 10 or 25 cents, even 50 cents per gallon. I think the public, he believes, could stomach this, especially if they understood that it was earmarked for infrastructure.
Right. No, I agree. And in fact, several states have. And ironically, they're not the states that you might expect. They tend to be some of our more conservative states politically. Idaho is one. Mm. I think Kentucky or Tennessee, if I'm not mistaken. I don't have the list in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, as I said, in Michigan, that seemed to be somewhere that our governor and legislature weren't quite willing to go, at least not in a very forceful way.
And did Idaho earmark that for infrastructure?
I'm not sure. I'd have to go back and look at things on a state-by-state basis. But I believe some fraction of these were allocated to infrastructure.
Interesting. More phone calls in a moment. What would we do? What would we do? What should we do? It's a reality with our $2 per gallon gas windfall is our question of the hour. Mark Bartow is director of the University of Michigan Energy Institute. In case you're just tuning us in, what's happened with consumer action since the drastic lowering of the price of gas at the pump? Our response has been to drive a lot more. Gas retail sales up close to 28%. And we're also buying cars that are not as fuel efficient, because who needs to worry about that because the gas is so cheap, right? Simultaneously, there's been a 5% increase in emissions from new vehicles over that period. And we have this goal from the Paris climate talks to reduce our greenhouse gas emissions by 2025. So the steps that we're taking would appear to be steps in the wrong direction, although we're feeling that we're saving a lot of money. But what are we doing to the environment? So what should we do with a $2 per gallon gas windfall? 800-486-8655, our number, email talk at WPR.org, Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, Twitter at K Dunn Show, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's go to more phone calls, and Richard in Madison. Hi, Richard.
Hi. Thanks for having this program. The comment I wish to make is really based on Alan Carroll's book, Geofuels, Energy in the Earth. In the his graph on energy return on investment, it shows that corn-based ethanol requires thousands of barrels of fresh water to equal one barrel of oil. So why are we requiring ethanol?
That's a very good question. And again, I think it comes from our thinking in previous decades about being energy short. The legislation that instituted the dramatic increase in the ethanol requirements and the renewable fuel standard was the 2007 Energy Independence and Security Act. So the idea was that this would be a homegrown fuel that would help us to thumb our nose at OPEC. Oh, and by the way, it would be cleaner as well. And I think those propositions turn out to be false, that really we don't need this to be energy independent. Secondly, it's not a very effective way to reduce our CO2 emissions, and it is having a dramatic effect on our water consumption, on our land. We're using 40% of our corn crop now for ethanol. That does drive up food prices. You know, meat is more expensive because of that. So I think certainly not all, but a significant fraction of the community, the science, engineering, economics community, would argue that corn ethanol is a bad idea. But it is now so entrenched politically in those states that are benefiting from it that it makes it difficult to get rid of. And some of that is connected to the fact that Iowa is the first state in the union to weigh in on
right.
presidential elections.
Right.
And so, you know, the views of the voters of Iowa and aligning with those tend to get much more attention from the candidates.
Oh, isn't that interesting? Iowa.
Can I make a comment?
Well, sure, you
about
could.
The previous caller who
yes.
was asking about state gas taxes.
Yes.
So I dug up the information in the meantime.
Good.
In the first half of 2015, six states raised their gas taxes.
Wow.
Iowa, South Dakota, Utah, Idaho, Georgia, and Nebraska. As I look at the electoral map, only one of those was a blue state in the 2012 election. That was Iowa. And for the most part, I would say that the uses of those are in part or in total for transportation. So they're going into state transportation.
And in Michigan, tell me a little bit more. Did it look like that might pass at some point? And what about the public response to an increase? How did the legislature deal with this?
Well, they went through lots of machinations.
Mm-hmm.
We actually had a ballot proposition that failed pretty miserably, but was not based on significant increases to the gas tax. They were doing anything they could to avoid that. Ultimately, they went back and have implemented a fraction of the revenue stream that will be needed from slowly increasing gas tax. But it's kind of cobbled together with trying to create a pool for investment in repairing the roads, cobbled together from a little bit of gas tax and a little bit of this and that and cuts and other things, rather than sort of meeting the problem head on and saying, you know, we have to fund this from revenue streams that are essentially associated with the public's need for roads.
Yes.
And fuels are certainly about as directly connected as you could get. Not completely, because there are electric cars and hybrids, and so there are a few people or some fraction for which the sort of road utilization doesn't quite track the average sort of fuel utilization. But at this point, the fraction of those high-efficiency cars on the road is small enough that it's really not a matter of substance.
Mm-hmm. We go, thanks, Richard. Barbara in Prairie du Chien. Hi.
Hi. I have to kind of piggyback on the caller that said he was so rural and had to drive 6 miles to the grocery.
Sure.
I'm in a situation where I have to drive 31 miles one way to work. And the prices right now are a blessing. And a tax any more on that, it would really hurt the people that come to Prairie du Chien.
Mark.
Yeah, so again, I think part of what the tax would do is hopefully incentivize some behavior, hopefully create some opportunities for investment, but that doesn't have to be the only part of the formula. And one could certainly imagine ways to decrease the burden, in rural areas or, places where the economy wasn't as strong. In some ways, again, doing that at the state level would make more sense. But we need to do it at some level.
And thanks for your call, Barbara. Adam in Milwaukee, hello.
Yes, hello. Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
I remember when ethanol first came in Wisconsin, and I'm a business owner, and I've just fallen into the habit of keeping mileage on all of my vehicles. And I remember that my mileage dropped 7 or 8% with the 10% ethanol additive. Have there been any studies of the net amount of emission savings? Because the math says that you're burning nearly the same amount of gasoline.
Well, I mean, the CO2 emissions per mile are about the same. So that's per mile traveled, not per gallon. You're absolutely right. Ethanol has a lower energy density than gasoline. So blending that in reduces your miles per gallon. And so in some ways, that is an increased cost that people don't recognize. The other point is that our ethanol production is heavily subsidized. So we're essentially plowing back dollars into this policy that, you know, may or may not be a good idea. I'm of the opinion it's not. Missing an opportunity, I think, to put resources into things that most people would think are a good idea, like fixing our roads.
And one more call. Adam, thank you. Nathan in Milwaukee, running short on time. Hi, Nathan.
Hi, thanks. I would support increasing both the gas tax, like was said, for roads and stuff like that, but also the carbon tax. And a portion of the carbon tax should be used for crisis situations like when there's floods and stuff like that, because we pay for that. But we don't necessarily associate that with global warming, yet global warming, with its increasing, is increasing those costs.
Yes.
So like roads, you should actually associate the two and have one sort of pay for the other, because we're going to have to pay for it anyway.
Hmm. Yeah, that's right. But, you know, if you start with the premise no new taxes, it makes it very difficult to think about ways that you can both implement, you know, public spending that needs to be done and fund it.
And you're not likely to hear increase in of any kind of tax in a presidential election year, are you?
At the federal level, I don't think there's a chance of that.
Mm-hmm.
Again, but at the state levels, and of course not all states have their elections in sync with the national elections.
Right.
You know, as I said, we've already seen some states moving in this direction, and surprisingly,
red
some
states.
Of the more politically conservative states.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Professor Bartow, for being with us. Interesting article and conversation. Our guest this hour, Mark Bartow, he is director of the University of Michigan Energy Institute, and suggests what we should do with our $2 per gallon gas windfall. If you didn't get on the air and want to leave comments, put them on our Facebook page. We'd like to read them. It's the Kathleen Dunn Show. Thank you, K.P. Whaley, for producing the hour, Scotty Myers, on-air production, and thanks for all of your interesting calls and messages. We'll return. News is next.